Hello and welcome to the August 26th edition of the TMS Wiki's Tuesday Night Peer Discussion Group. Now, currently, we are discussing the new book out by Nicole Sachs, LCSW, The Meaning of Truth, Embrace Your Truth, Create Your Life. This week, we are discussing chapters 5 and 5.5, where we talk about the journey to journal speak and then journal speak itself. In particular, what we do in these chapters is Nicole shares her own story as a way of illustrating how important this is and how it can change your life and how to do it, and I'd say also perhaps how difficult it is and how much courage it takes. So we're gonna go through it chapter by chapter. We'll also have some questions at the end, open it up. But the one thing I have to say before we start is that, well, two things. The first is that we are not medical or we are not acting in the capacity of medical or mental health practitioners in this thing. We're just sharing our own experiences as peers. If you have a medical or mental health concern, of course, you're going to want to see a properly licensed practitioner. And of course, everybody here is stating only their own opinions. This is an open discussion forum that we just share in hopes that someone may find it helpful. We are, of course, very, very lucky to have the author here herself. She is a wonderful and inspiring speaker, and an engaging one as well. So thank you, Nicole, for joining us.
My pleasure.
So let's dive right in. So these two chapters, I think, go together very well. The first one is the journey to journal speak. And you talk about why you brought this up. And then you go in and you say, I'm going to try to tell you this story that expresses the enormity of the impact that journal speak has had on my life. I coined this phrase out of sheer need, as it was through this brand of honesty that my life was born. Bear with me, I will do my best to explain how I discovered it, which I thought was a great summary of what we are here to do. But just in terms of little quotes, you wrote, "Everyone has their hard knocks, but if they are yours, they are yours." And I know that's not on the big theme of the chapter, but I just thought I knew that there had to be a story behind that sentence, and I was wondering if you could tell me what it means that one's own hard knocks are that they're yours, that you own them, and that maybe did I get that there's something of importance in that?
Oh my God, yeah. I mean, Forrest, there's amazing, incredible importance in that. So I'm thrilled that you brought it up because I think it will be really helpful for everyone. My feeling is that people, and I see this a lot in my practice, where they like to come in and say, "Oh, this is what's upsetting me," and they could even be crying, they could be really upset, but then they could say, "But you know what? You know, so and so down the street, her husband has cancer, or so and so, my aunt, she's morbidly obese and she's trying to lose weight and she can't, or so and so, they are clinically depressed and they can't get out of bed, so I have no right to my feelings." I hear that a lot, and what I really try to completely invite people to embrace is, your experience is your experience. And yes, there are always going to be people that have a more upsetting on paper experience than you. But it doesn't mean that your experience is invalid. And that is something that I think a lot of people need to understand. And I like to impart that to my clients and in my book, which is, everything is relative. Go back to Einstein, the theory of relativity. Everything is relative to the situation that one is in. So if, you're in a situation where you have a family member who is ill and it's slaying you, it doesn't mean that yours isn't important because somebody else's family member died. And that is something that needs to be understood for us to embrace ourselves, our truth, and to heal our TMS. Because if everything you think is about somebody else's situation is worse, you're never going to give yourself permission to feel.
And it kind of fits into that whole self-denying part of the TMS psychology where we put everyone else in front of ourselves.
true.
And I guess is what you're saying is that we're important too. You know, if it gotcha. If it's important to us, it's important.
It's very important, and I love that you brought it up because, it's funny. I come to these things and I bring my book because I wrote it and I've read it 100 million times. I haven't read those two chapters in the past week necessarily. And so I bring it with me and I don't necessarily pick out the sentences that you pick out. So I want to just tell you, I appreciate that you chose that because I think that's so important and that people really don't necessarily think on that. And that's, it's actually key in healing to make sure to prioritize one's own issues.
Well, and it's tough because I think that some people do find some solace in knowing that other people have gone through worse. Like Helen Keller is an inspirational figure, and sometimes I think it's so overwhelming that it can be healing to know that someone else has survived worse. For example, a lot of people like Steve Ozanich's book because he suffered so much. A lot of people will like your book because you suffered so much. Is there a way to reconcile those two ideas? That to some degree, it's helpful to know that someone else had it worse, but also to respect your own problems because they are yours.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think, I remember when I first saw the musical Avenue Q, and I don't know if anyone else
it's made for you, yes.
Schadenfreude. But anyway, there's this term Schadenfreude, which means, feeling basically better about yourself for other people's losses. But yes, I think there's a lot of truth to the fact that it makes you feel better to feel other people have suffered. But to be honest, and to respect the TMS community as I do, the reason we feel better is because we feel connected. It's not because we want other people to suffer. It's we want to feel not alone.
Yeah.
And so the moment we understand that someone else has also suffered, I actually would feel comfortable saying I speak for all of us. None of us want another person to suffer. Right. None of us glory in somebody else's pain, but it's just the fact that we're not alone. We have someone else who's felt and heard and thought the way we do. There's like a naked man who just walked by.
There totally is a naked man who's going jogging.
In case you don't know that, Forrest, because I don't want you to get assaulted. Hi, Timothy.
Right. No, he's perfectly harmless. He's a very nice guy. He's a meditator.
off for an
evening jog.
Anyway, so what I'm saying is I completely agree with you, but on the nicest possible side of it, which is that we just it's okay. Hi.
you've been immortalized in a podcast. Go away. He's very sweet. Anyway, that's my roommate. Keep going.
So I was just saying that,
Dr. Dreyfus.
I think that is helpful because people want to feel connected to other people's pain because it makes them feel less alone.
Excellent. Excellent. Does anyone have any questions about that? I've noticed a whole bunch of people have joined us in the interim. I apologize if I have a little bit of background noise. Does anyone have any questions?
Yes. There's Joan. How are you?
Hey,
Real
Joan.
Quickly. Hi. I came in late. Can you explain the TMS imperative real quickly?
Ooh, that would be great. A great question to do later on. Let's do the,
okay.
So we try to do the meeting where we focus on the book and do kind of tightly organized
okay.
early on. And
That's
then,
fine.
But any other questions regarding what we just discussed? Because if not, I do have another question. All right, let's dive on in. So there was another sentence which really jumped out at me, which I could very much relate to, you were talking about your father, and so you began at the beginning, because all of our stories start in childhood and have their roots there. And so you talk about your story. You say that the hardest part was his disapproval. Let's start a little bit more broadly, in that your description of your father was It was so complex. I mean, on one level, you're talking about how he is a smart, kind-hearted human,
Why are you here?
and then
Don't ask me.
immediately
You don't. I'm gonna put you to bed.
we have child-rearing experiences going on in the background.
By the way, that's my kids. That's Tiffany. Meet her.
Oh, I see. Okay, that's wonderful. So on the one level, you have a kind, smart, loving, smart, kind-hearted man, another defensive, tortured man, and on another level, he is disapproving. He's hurting you because he wants to, in some sense, police the way that you think. But at the same time, he's showing you that he loves you vehemently.
That's
And
the
so,
conflict. That's the conflict that is the thing that most people get stuck on.
tell me about that then. Yes.
Okay. And actually, I was just in session with a client this morning and talking about the same thing. Conflict is what kills us. Conflict is what drives our TMS. For the most part, Forrest, can you
Okay.
mute her?
I'm gonna have to mute your wife again.
Yeah,
Okay,
please.
yes.
Can you do
Anyway, keep
so?
going. Yes, indeed.
I'm all the way at my office and I'm still parenting my kids.
All right, keep going.
So conflict is what kills. Okay, so basically it's like this. You know, if you feel strongly one way about something or another way about something, you're fine. You're not going to get TMS about it. If you know, I use extreme examples in my practice, like if you are incredibly, disgusted by a child molester, which most of us are. You know, we're not going to sit around and be like obsessed with the fact that it's sad they're in jail. It's like, okay, sayonara, go to jail.
Right.
But if it's your parent or if it's your sibling or if it's your best friend or your spouse that's abusing you in some fashion, there's always a conflict because the conflict is what makes us hurt. Because we love someone, we hate them. You know, we approve of somebody, but they're hurting us. Or we, if it's a parent and we're the child, we seek love, but we also resent the fact that we have to work so hard for the love we seek, right? So it's a conflict, and the conflict is what causes the TMS. So I do believe that that's kind of what you're like kind of looking for in that question, because it's true.
I mean, I just thought it was interesting, but it reminds me of the concept. So is what you're talking about the idea of ambivalence, that it can be.
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, gotcha. Do you want to explain that? Because I find it such a helpful term, and I'm sure you can define it better than I can.
Sure. I mean, do you have a specific way you want me to define ambivalence or just the way I write about it?
Well, or just emotional ambivalence.
Okay. So think about it like this. So my dad, he's passed away. Okay. So I mean, it's kind of easier for me to talk about this, yes and no. But when I grew up, he was very, very judgmental. He was very disapproving. Everything I did was the wrong choice, and stuff like that. And so as I grew, I just felt very judged by him, and then I judged myself very harshly. And as I grew, it turned into TMS because I mean I was like my own worst enemy, like all the things that we talk about, perfectionistic, goodist, because I wanted to make everyone happy because I felt like I was constantly disappointing him. And so the ambivalence really lies in the fact that he was my father though, and I lived to impress and to have him approve of me. I lived that. So when you live that for someone, but you also kind of hate them for, creating a situation where you're constantly judging oneself, that is a huge conflict. And without recognizing that, a lot of TMS is hidden. And that's, I guess, that's the big reason I spoke about it so much, because I know that I'm a good girl and I know I did well in school and I know that I'm not a bad person. But the way I was raised didn't feel that way. And that's the reason, a great deal of the reason I think I had so much TMS as a young person, because I was desperate to be perfect and to please someone who was unpleasable but I still loved him and I still wanted to please him. So I think that's where the ambivalence lies.
Yeah, I totally. Well, and ambivalence comes up later on in the chapter. I mean, in terms of rearing children, and the complexity that that can bring. And I think that's a big issue. Well, I mean, when I think about the big things, kind of the classic sources, or some of the classic sources of TMS is like caretaking for an elder. There's going to be a lot of ambivalence there, contradictory emotions,
Yeah.
child rearing, lots of contradictory emotions. And I just want to say about the father thing, I totally related to that too. I've had a complex relationship with my own father. And one thing in particular which struck me is how you wrote that the hardest part, maybe this goes to the heart of the ambivalence, was that his, or the, it's the conflict that kills, you use the phrase, was that his disapproval was not confined to the way I behaved. He disapproved of the way that I thought. There was nowhere to hide. Even my innermost thoughts were tainted. And I guess I just related to how challenging or damaging this can be, in the sense that, you know, if how can you ever do it right if you have to police your own thoughts?
Correct. Yeah. And honestly, and part of the reason why I'm thrilled to do this book group and also just have my book out there in general is I want people to understand that if they felt this way about their upbringing, they are not alone. Because I just think so many people, and I watch them in my office making the mistake, and it makes me crazy. These are your children, they're not you. They're different people. They're people. They have brains. They are developing. They're being people. They're growing into who they are. They have humanity, right? And it's like if we impose our thoughts and feelings on them in a way that makes them feel like they can't grow into who they are, that creates TMS in children. It just does. And so essentially that's what you're discussing, and it's right on.
Yeah, I love the way earlier on you talked about giving the kids that for that freedom to be themselves and to recognize those differences. That was powerful and inspiring stuff. So let's jump ahead, and I guess you had back pain straight from the start, but then it peaked during Hell Week at college, or it was the first real acute
Yeah.
episode.
That was the first time it stopped me in my tracks. Like, I had achy back pain since I was probably 10. But the first time it stopped me in my tracks was that time, yes.
And that was rough. And then you went and you saw this doctor, Doctor Doctor. Do you want to tell us about your experience with Doctor Doctor?
Okay. So the question that was posed earlier, I just want to be clear, Forrest. I think it was Joan said she wanted to hear about Dr. Doctor. Was she talking about Dr. Sarno? I'm the first doctor I saw was the one who slayed me. So I want to make sure to say out loud here that the first experience that I speak of in my book is not Dr. Sarno.
Course, of
Okay, I just
course.
want to say that out, I just want to say that out loud, just in case anyone's confused. Okay?
Yes.
Because Dr. Sarno was amazing, and the first doctor who saw me was like, So let's make sure to differentiate, okay? So essentially what happened was I had this pain incident when I was it was my freshman year. Freshman year? Yeah, it was my freshman year, like Christmas break-ish time, and of college. And we were in Hell Week, which just means, no one was really abusing us. We just had to be there and a lot of expectations on us and a lot of people making us feel like we were disappointments constantly, because that's the point. And my back just became so seized up that I couldn't move and I was in excruciating pain. And I was very scared because I'd always known that I had a little bit of back pain, but I didn't know that it was going to be something hellaciously life-ending, which is what ended up being communicated to me, which of course didn't happen. But and so my parents had to pick me up from school, and I had to go home a little early. But the point is that I saw an orthopedic surgeon, and that's Dr. Doctor, and that's who Forrest is speaking of in this chapter, who just looked at me, and I was only, 18, 19, however old I was, And he said, you know, basically, in case you haven't noticed, your life is over. It's done. You know, you're going to probably not have children. You shouldn't, you know, do the 10 things you love: horseback riding, skiing, snowboarding, jogging, walking, riding on long car rides, traveling, being on anything that would be, you know, confining your body to a seat for more than 30 minutes. Basically, you know, go die. You know, right. Essentially what I was told. And what he said was that the only thing that would really be effective was spinal fusion surgery, but that would be a major surgery and 6 weeks in a body cast, and that he didn't recommend it at my age. And so I was just basically given a death sentence and then told, but there's really nothing that's going to help you at all. And that was horrifying. You know, I mean, there's no other way to explain it at that age. Yeah. But at the same time, and I say this in the book, and it's still with me, I'm naturally defiant. I don't feel that people necessarily can tell me how to live my life if I'm not sure that it works for me. And so I just continued living. I mean, I was only, you know, 19. I wasn't ready to have kids anyway, or 18. I wasn't ready to do anything that would cause that much of a disturbance in my life. So I kind of just lived on at that point.
Yep. Yep. But specifically, so for carrying a baby was out.
Yeah. And that was a huge deal. Yeah. And that was such a huge deal. And I know I go into it in the book because I had been longing to be a parent for as long as I could remember. And that was something huge for me.
Right. Yeah. And also he showed some, just the diagnosis itself was pretty tough. He told you some pretty scary things about the spine, as he called it. Yeah. What did he say?
Well, I have a condition, and this is actually something people should understand. I still have this condition. This condition is still this, you know, nothing has happened here that has changed it. I have a condition called spondylolisthesis. It means that my lower vertebrae, and oh God, Forrest, you might be able to help me out. I know there's like S1, S2. I never memorized it because every time anyone has diagnosed me, I've been like, fuck you. So I don't listen to this BS about it. But in the lower reaches of my spine, where it meets my sacrum, I have two very significant spontaneous fractures. I have an entire vertebrae that is shattered and replaced with scar tissue. And the way my MRI looks, it's not like scoliosis where it's like this. Mm-hmm. Okay. It's not like that. It goes straight down like a regular spine, and then it literally goes like this and like this. It's like a shelf. And I've seen it. I have my MRIs. I know what it looks like. I've watched numerous doctors be like, oh my
God. It looks of shock and horror.
Yes, yes.
Because,
horror, shock and awe, you know, because
the vertebrae don't line up. Like they're going straight, one on top of the other, and then they're not on top of the other.
Not at all. And so what happened was I was told, you know, I couldn't do all these things and it's horrible condition. And that was the state of affairs. I mean, it is. And what I want to say to inspire people is, it still is. I have had no spinal fusion surgery. I don't have any. I don't go to PT. Nothing has changed my spine. And the most healing thing that Dr. Sarno ever said to me was, he took my MRI. He shoved it up on the thing. He looked at it. He said, there's no way for this to account for your pain. And I said, what are you talking about? This is, I'm coming to you, you know, look at what's wrong with me. And he said, that's fine, but your pain goes up the right side, down your butt, sometimes in your shoulder.
Okay, yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. And he goes, there just isn't a medical scientific way that this structural abnormality that you do have, which I still have, can account for your pain. And that was one of the most healing things that has ever been said to me. Because I stopped the fear. The fear is the number one TMS catalyst. Because we hear that something's wrong with us, and then we decide something's wrong with us. and then we continue to give energy into the space in which something's wrong with us. Right, Forrest?
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. And then it can even be fear of the pain.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so powerful. So powerful. Well, thank you for sharing that. Let me open it up to questions. Does anyone have any questions about what we've talked about? Any follow-up questions or maybe even about the material we're coming up on?
Don't be shy.
I have a question. Sorry.
Shoot. Yes.
Hey, Nicole. How you doing?
Who's on? Joe. Hey, Joe.
Hey. So, you know, I'm about 5.5 months into TMS therapy, and I have to say, emotionally, it seems the progress is more than physically. And, the biggest fear that I have, it's not I know there's stuff going on. We talk about my parents. We talk about my childhood, current stuff, all kinds of stuff. But for me, there's a big fear of all the symptoms, the fatigue, the body aches, all of it. And like right now, I could go and do yoga for an hour. I'd be in agony. And so one thing that my therapist doesn't quite have the answer to, and I'm just looking for kind of like advice on it, is, you know, like with your patients, when do you tell them, like if they're if their body's hurt a lot, do you do a certain amount of therapy and then say, okay, now is the time to like kind of like start really pushing yourself, or should you start doing that before you really kind of get to the root of the emotional issues?
Okay, well, that's a great question, because I think people really struggle with this. And so I'm going to defer for a moment to Dr. Sarno, because this was asked a lot on the panel. And what Dr. Sarno used to say is, don't push yourself beyond your comfort. What he said a lot was this, that if you've decided, and I put that in quotes, that it's going to hurt when you blank, when you run, when you walk, when you climb, when you roll, when you sleep, when you sit, you know, and everyone in the world could pick one of those, even though that might not be yours. You're going to promote your TMS by deciding that it's going to hurt you. And I know that sounds crazy, and it's really hard to get past that point. But one of the things I will say is the only way you can go forward with physical activity that hurts you is if you decide that it's going to be okay. And that sounds kind of like rainbows and lollipops, mm-hmm. but it's really not. Far after I overcame my greatest struggle with my back pain, it still hurt me to exercise. And I just decided, you know, in my typical fashion, fuck this. You know, I decided not to let it have power, but I was ready for that decision. And it needs to be something you're ready for. So if there is a part of your life that is still holding you up, remember, and Joe, I'm pretty sure you've read the whole book, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so you've come to the patience and kindness chapter, which so many people like to negate.
Definitely.
Okay. So there's certainly a part of this that is important for you to just show patience and kindness to yourself. So if there's a part of this that you're not ready for, if you're starting to exercise or you're starting to, you know, whatever, use your body in a certain way where you're feeling pain, we need to, like, you know, nurture ourselves. It's so hard, but it's so important. And say, hey, maybe you don't need to do that yet. Without shame, most importantly, without shame and without fear and without guilt. Because if shame and guilt and fear are attached, it's not going to help you to not do it. Does that make sense?
It makes a lot of sense, yeah. A follow-up question, what I really want to know is, has anyone, let's say, you know, it hurts, and I've heard stories of, like, from my therapist where his foot hurt, and he said no, because he has TMS, you know, I'm going to keep going. He said he was crying because the pain was so bad, and he kept going, and eventually the pain went away. And I read the same thing in Steve O's, I'm trying to say the name wrong, Ozniak's book.
Steve O, just call him Steve O.
Yeah, and so I feel like I'm about ready to try something like that. Like, I feel like it's not going to damage me, but has anyone done it and, like, they did damage themselves that you know of?
No. The one thing I will say about TMS PMS is not a structural condition. You cannot hurt yourself worse. You're not going to break.
Okay.
You might hurt worse. I mean, this is the thing. I'm not your therapist, and I don't know you well enough to, like, completely... This is, Forrest, this becomes hard because I can't be, you know, directly one-on-one with people. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so I just want to say that because I don't want
to... Do whatever you got to do to, you know...
No, I'm just saying, Joe, I don't know you well enough to, like, you know, totally say, do what you're doing. Like, you know, it's not responsible for me to say that straight up. Right. But what I will say is, in my experience, you know, whatever is wrong with my back is not going to get hurt worse if I push myself, because what really hurts me is my TMS. And I'm confident about that because I've seen it in hundreds and hundreds of cases over about 12 years. So there is a part of me that's comfortable saying that. However, because I'm not your therapist and because I'm not a physician, it's, you know, I have to just give a bit of a disclaimer that I can't say for sure you shouldn't lose yourself. You understand what I'm saying?
Definitely, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, no, that's good to hear your anecdotes about your the people you've talked to and you've helped, because when it comes down to it, one of my biggest challenges is overcoming the fear of pain. I don't feel like I'm going to injure myself or damage myself, but the fear of really bad back pain or knee pain, you know, without damage, that's very strong in my mind, as I'm sure it is in a lot of TMSers.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to even take it a step further. It's not just the fear of the pain. It's the fear of what the pain means. And this is something that is so much more damaging than the pain. It's kind of like this. Forrest, you get what I'm saying?
Actually, I was going to ask you to elaborate on that a little bit.
Yeah, because it's important.
Yeah.
Okay, so what I'm trying to say is this. If I have... Okay, so I'm going to give an example. I'm just making it up. So say I'm a marathon runner, and say running marathons is a huge part of what makes up my self-esteem and my self-worth and my personal power and my place in this world, because that's what I do. I do that, right? And now I have a knee problem and I can't, and I actually, you know, don't take advantage of the next marathon coming up, you know, cause I'm a marathon runner and I do every city, and I decide to opt out of New York, okay, this fall. The meaning that creates is so much more powerful than the actual pain in my knee. So what I'm trying to say is, if you're looking to understand TMS, it is, who am I then? Who am I if I'm not a marathon runner? Who am I if I'm not powerful enough to complete this race? Who am I if I'm not going to travel to, you know, blah city and do the race there? You know, and this kind of fear and panic and self, you know, judgment of who I am really is the culprit far more than the ache in the knee. If that... Forrest, can you help me out with that? Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. And I was dying for an opportunity to tell my story there, because that's so very true for me. I mean, so for you, it would be, if I can't be a mother, you know, if my back pain is going to take away my chance to be a mother. For me, it was, I guess in some sense, if I can't be a father, if I can't be a husband. So I think at the early 20s, one learns to be an independent adult. And so for me, I was going to be a programmer or a professor, and I was going to use computers. I knew that. And if I couldn't type, if I couldn't use a computer, there went my ability to be an independent person, to support myself, to, you know, be a good spouse. Was I going to be alone?
I want to interrupt you for 1 second, because I want everyone to hear that. That is so much more powerful than what he's going to do for a living. Sorry to sit and therapize you, but, you know, you threw your hat in the ring, Forrest, and now you're in it. Because what he just said is something that people need to understand so much, which is, am I going to be able to be a provider? Do you know how much huger that is than do I have, you know, carpal tunnel pain? Like, it's huge. It defines your entire life. And that's the thing that I think people get incredibly caught up in. And of course they do, right? I mean, that's the stuff that life is made of. What do we have, right? We have relationships. We have, if we want to bear children and you know, be a person that is a parent. And we have our jobs. Right. There's like not that much else in terms of like big categories.
I'm sorry. So a good idea, I would think, for journaling would be the consequences of being in a lot of pain, or at least in my mind or in anyone else's mind, what that would entail versus the actual physical sensation. Yes. What would it do?
Yes. Yes, Joe. Yes. That is great. Because we need to look at the bigger picture, because that is what is killing you. It's not the pain you feel. Yes, the pain's the catalyst. The pain's the trigger. But what's really killing you is the dashed expectations of your entire life, which, by the way, is complete bullshit. And you're fine. And you're going to do everything you want to do. Stick with me. That's what I tell all my clients. Stick with me. You're fucking fine. Enough of this bullshit. And I know that, you know, I'm trash mouth and everything, but, you know, it's... It works. It works for me.
I like the trash mouth. Thank you.
Thank you. So anyway, so yes, I think that's incredibly important. And every time someone says that, I support it 1,000,000% because I want people to look deeper. That's what I want. I want you to look at your life, not the fact that you have a pain. Because your life is what's causing the pain because you're scared you're not going to be able to live it.
Yeah. Yeah, no. Go ahead.
No, well, keep going. You got a dynamic going.
I was just going to say, being an 80s child, like I think Nicole is, and possibly you too, Forrest, the movies back then, the culture, the TV shows, everything was about being a movie star and being really super successful. And so we kind of, I think, at least for me, I kind of unconsciously absorbed that. And then, you know, little back pain, that freaked me out, and that kind of went into other pain, and it just compounds. Yeah. I'm seeing my therapist tomorrow. This is some good stuff.
Well, no, it's fabulous. It's because it's actually really true, because what you're saying is it translated into what am I going to become? I kind of thought I was going to be A, B, or C. That's not in the cards anymore because I'm damaged. This is what people need to understand. They decide they're damaged. You're not damaged, but you decide that you are. And if you do, it changes everything. It changes your expectations. It changes the diagram of everything you've decided is going to be your life.
Yeah.
And that is incredibly powerful stuff.
Definitely.
Hey, Forrest, I'm just realizing my computer's on red. I have to plug it in.
Okay.
One second. I'm so in love with this dog. But
you are holding up the cutest dog.
Hold on. I have to plug my computer in. I have the cord. It's just I'm looking at it, and I don't want to, like, all of a sudden I'm having, like, a beautiful thought, and I'm like.
And all of a sudden you disappear, and I'm, like, treading water.
Gone.
Yeah, I can relate to that. Does anyone else have a question they want to ask? We can repeat it, but now would be a good time to.
Is that dog naked?
The dog is naked. I have a tennis Tom. Is that you?
Yeah.
Who else would it be, really?
Yeah.
Hey, I have a sweater. I have a sweater for the dog. Hold on. She needs a drink. Look what I've given her. My favorite mug.
Oh.
I can't read. Work with me, people.
Oh, work with me, people. Yes, of course.
What does it say? Don't fuck with me, people. What does it say?
Work with me, people.
Oh, okay.
Okay, speaking of which, we are now plugged in. And so I guess I wanted to come up with a question following up on Joe's question, which is, I mean, you've talked about the terror of the pain, of the symptoms themselves, and then what the symptoms mean to you in your life. Can it ever get to the point where there's kind of an initiating trauma, and then, or do you ever see this, where there's an initiating trauma, or bad experience, or emotional tension, or rage, but then at a certain point, it becomes a self-perpetuating cycle of fear of the symptoms and fear of what your life has become.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Do you want me to speak on that?
Please, yes. If you didn't, I was going to use my own example because that's definitely my story, but let's hear yours.
Well, you know what? Actually, this helps me because, like I said, I'm a therapist. So what I do is I take my story, I inform myself through my story, and then I hear your story and yours and yours and yours and yours, right? And then through hearing your story, I can further help anyone listening. So start with your story for us, and I'm gonna advise.
Or better yet, because it is always wonderful when we get multiple voices on here, can anyone else relate to that idea? Can anyone else talk about how... Does anyone else feel like one of the major sources of their tension and possibly even rage or stress is simply the situation that they're in?
Yes, of course.
Yeah, I know. I knew someone would pop up on that. Do you want to talk about that, Joan?
No.
Okay. Does anyone else want to join in and tell their story and maybe get some feedback from the therapist?
Forrest, I'd like to comment on Joe regarding fear of doing physical activity, doing further harm. One of my favorite quotes of the good doctor is, he said, "If it's too heavy to lift, you couldn't lift it."
It's a wonderful quote.
Yeah.
That's a great quote.
Yeah, another one I've heard wasn't from him, but the mind will give up before the body. So your mind will stop running before you can injure yourself. And pretty much I tell people, you would have had to fall out of a fourth-story building to really, you know, do some structural damage. Not quite true, but the body is pretty resilient and it heals itself. And normal day-to-day activities, running, other stuff like that, I believe it's, you can't really hurt yourself or wear out your body parts.
No, you can't. I mean, but like I said, I can't stand in the place of a medical doctor, and I've never met you physically. So I have to say, all I'm telling you is, if you are confident that and you've been evaluated, that the symptoms are, you know, originating in a TMS situation, running, nothing can hurt you. If I'm having a TMS flare-up, I can walk down the street and I can feel worse pain than if I'm lifting the heaviest thing or if I'm caring for my kids in the most, you know, difficult manner. It's really about the TMS and what's driving it.
Yep.
What do you do then with that kind of programming? Like for example, if like Forrest, like I read your story how like when you would type or whatever it was you were doing, you had scribes. So I mean, with that programming there, if you've kind of already done the other stuff with the psychotherapy, do you just make yourself do it?
Well, to be honest, so I can only tell my story as it is. I lived with a great deal of fear of the symptoms. I feel that a lot of my stress and my tension and my rage was coming from what my life had become of not marrying someone whom I loved because I didn't feel like I could be a husband. I didn't feel like I could get out of bed sometimes. You know, that sort of tension, I think that's what happened to me, which is just tragic. I lived with it for 18 years, but then my recovery was kind of simple. I didn't do a shred of psychotherapy. I got David Schechter's journaling workbook. I think I got 2 pages into it. I didn't want to do it. I was just like, this is boring. And I didn't do that. That was my story. Other people do a lot of journaling. But what did I do? It took me a little while. Not very long, actually. About 2 months, I started walking. I noticed that my symptoms did increase, but they stopped increasing after a certain point. And that gave me confidence, and that overcame my fear. And so I guess for me, it was all about the fear. And
for so many, Forrest, for so many, it's about the fear.
Yeah, yeah.
So maybe like unconsciously by doing these things, your brain gets convinced, oh, this isn't dangerous. This is doable.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And I think it may be legitimate for some people to have a certain amount or maybe even a lot of symptoms for a while. And maybe even throughout your life. I mean, I think that there are a lot of people, I still get symptoms. When I type a bunch, I still get symptoms. If I handwrite a bunch, I bet I would get symptoms. I don't need to handwrite, I don't need to type.
Yeah, I want to normalize this for you personally and for everyone. So do I.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny. It's like, I wrote the book on it. I mean, not the book, because I know a lot of people have written books, but I'm just saying, like, there is never a time that I want anybody to judge themselves. Yeah. Forrest is basically the single-handed person who's running this whole TMS wiki. I wrote the book, The Meaning of Truth. Steve-O is whomever. You know, Fran, Eric, I bet you $1 million that we all get some sort of TMS symptoms sometimes, because that's life. And that's being a thinking, smart human being. And the pool of people that is affected by this are all smart, thoughtful, upwardly mobile human beings. Like, this is not a disease of stupid people. And I say this honestly, because I hate to be an asshole and I'm not trying to be a snob, but I'm saying, like, you need to really have a bit of a thoughtful mind to even do this to yourself. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
So there can never be judgment. There can never be judgment, even if, you know, you thought you were totally recovered and then something else comes up. So what? You know, just patience and kindness for yourself, understanding it's TMS, using whatever method, you know, Forrest has his, other people have theirs. The fear is the worst part. Do not let yourself be enveloped by fear that you will never live the life you've imagined, or else you will be paralyzed.
So true.
Follow up, Chris. For Joe about, you know, too, I found that one, I had pain, I would just give it. You have to take that first step, that, you know, whatever, Buddhist, Zen, every voyage starts with the first step. And it would be 10, 20 minutes, and then the pain would evaporate, and I'd feel great. Unfortunately, when doctors give you the nocebo, you never take that first step because you're in fear of taking the first step because you're going to do further injury. But you have to give it a try. And your body will tell you after 10, 20 minutes, keep going, or, it feels better. You've gone through it, like walking or running or, you know, things like that.
Absolutely. And you know what, Tom, I think, first of all, I want to say, because I didn't get to say this earlier, I so appreciate that you finished the book. Thank you. Tom and I have been in contact for quite a while, and when I first joined a different... totally different site and had absolutely no idea what it was and tried to just say, hey, can I help people? And I got a really negative response. Tom, thank you a million times. Thank you for always believing in me and defending me, because I didn't understand that the negativity, this is not TMS Wiki, different site. But I'm thrilled that you finished it, because I know that it took you a little bit, but I'm glad that you're getting something out of it.
You're very welcome. And yeah, that was a real craziness over there at the other site, because it's an unmoderated site, essentially. And it is what it is, which has plus and minuses. But I mean, I was astounded myself that you, and it wasn't just you, it was also Steve-O, came to it to, you know, cheerfully announce, I have a book. And then, but I think it was just fear, subconscious fear of these people. Uh-oh. There might be a cure for what ails me, and their subconscious said I have to attack it without ever having looked inside the book. It was purely superficial assessment by somebody, basically. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so I mean, I don't, Forrest, I don't mean to, like, you know, bring the conversation to another
Well,
place.
And that, I'm gonna take one teaching moment. One of the things I have to do as the administrator of the forum is explain why the policies are the way that they are, and one of the reasons why I, as administrator of the Wiki's forum, will step in and take an active position. And I never have to do it because we've set a good precedent. But this is why I know that it is my job and my responsibility to, if any personal attacks are made. Or if any other inappropriate behavior occurs, is to stop it then, so that we don't have regrettable incidents happening like that.
Right. But and your site never, ever, ever, ever has had that.
It's true, yeah. We have wonderful people. But you're absolutely right. We should move on. And Let's see. Where were we? Where even were we? I don't even remember what we were talking about.
I mean, we only have a few more minutes, so I guess in terms of, Forrest, in terms of the chapters, was there anything else that you wanted to bring up in terms of, you know, what we're covering? Because I know as of next week, we're on to what, chapter 6?
Yes. I mean, so officially we're going to do 6 and 7 next week. I think that we should officially say 6 and 7, but let's start with 5.5 and we'll see how far we get. So if people are keeping up, we'll read 6 and 7. Does that sound good to people? Any objections to that plan? But we haven't gotten into 5 and to chapter 5.5. So, and I really want to spend some time on that because there is much of your cruise in there.
And also, Forrest, just so you know, I don't have a time limit on this. I'm thrilled to give my time to this forum and to this session.
Yeah.
So if we want to take longer, and if it's going to, it's my pleasure. I just want to help people and I want to spread the word of, you know, how people can be helped. So if you, I mean, we can say 6 and 7, but I guess it's hard because people don't want to speak up and I totally respect that. But maybe if people could just like message Forrest privately or whatever and say, if you want to be like slower with this, I'm so completely on board. It's all good for me. You know, Tuesday nights, you know, thank you to Tiffany, if you're still there. you know, I have support at home and, I have company and it's okay. So I'm just saying, if anybody, I want to really not gloss over things if it's going to help people. That's all I'm saying.
Well, thank you. That is definitely appreciated. And your graciousness in participating is certainly appreciated. So, yeah, if anybody has any feedback about pacing, how quickly or slowly you want us to go, I felt it was important to cover a lot because there were tools early on, but I am ready to slow down a little bit in case people want to share their story. I really appreciated hearing Joe's story, so thank you for that. Ellen, who called, unfortunately, is out of the country, so she won't be calling in as much. So we need to encourage some other people to join in and share your experiences. Can I ask, if anyone has any feedback ever at any point about any of the PBT TMS Peer Network's programs, including the TMS Wiki or its forum or these discussion groups, never hesitate to email me. My email address is forrest@tmswiki.org. Forrest, that's with one R, not two. Though if you misspell it, it'll still get to me. at tmswiki.org, you can send an email and say, I wanted to go faster, I wanted to go slower, I really want Nicole to talk about X, Y, Z. And we will make sure that it, I will definitely hear that and take it very, very seriously. You talked about compassion for yourself and how important that was. And you say as a side note, first you say that I steeped myself in this welcome pool of denial for quite a while. You were lamenting your fate. You had gone back to New York City, graduated with your BA. There was no acute episode until you were, I think, 27. And you steeped yourself in this welcome pool of denial for quite a while, and it worked. And then the parenthesis is what I'm really interested in here. You say, trust me, I will never criticize you for your personal denial. Sometimes you really need it for the moment. And I thought that was a very interesting question about pacing and about when people are ready to go to the next step versus when they might not be.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a good point to end on, so people don't ever judge themselves for where they are at in the process, because there are a lot of times, and one of the things I do with my own clients is I point it out to them. I say, we're not going to BS each other, so we know that this is an issue, blank, you know, whatever it is, A, B, or C, but we're not going to deal with it today because we're not ready. And I think that creates a lot of comfort and safety in people. And so just so you know, like for what you just, you know, quoted, you need your denial. You need your self-protective mechanisms if they're cropping up again and again and again. You know, we have about 10 to 12 defense mechanisms that we all use. It's in the DSM-4. It's actually clinical language. And if we're using those defense mechanisms It means we need them. Now, what I do as a therapist is I stand to delineate what's working for us and what's no longer working for us. So, like, to give the worst, most dramatic example possible, when a child is sexually or physically abused, and I think we've talked about this, they dissociate. So it's almost like they lift out of their body and they're this, like, floating being seeing what is happening beneath them. And that works for them in terms of significant abuse because their psyche cannot handle being in the midst of such a horrifying situation. However, fast forward 20 years and that same individual is trying to have an intimate relationship with their spouse or their boyfriend or girlfriend, it can be completely, you know, usurped by the same dissociation that saved that child back when they were 8 or 9. And that's something that I help people uncover because our defense mechanisms are necessary for us. We are using them to protect ourselves. And then when they no longer become functional is when we suffer, and TMS kind of goes hand in hand with those times. So I like to tell people, if you feel like you're totally not ready to, you know, attack a certain topic, there's a reason for that. Let's talk about that. Let's open ourselves. Let's not hide from that. And the best advice I can give to anyone regarding TMS is let's never hide from that. Whatever that is, let's never hide. Because even if it's just a conversation like, I'm not ready to talk about blah, let's say that. Because we can't hide from that either. And that's what I was trying to say.
That's great. That's profound, and it reminds me a little bit of what Joe was talking about with stepping out the movement. I mean, maybe there are times when you're not quite ready to do that walking or to do that exercise, and you just have to wait until. I wonder if you just have to wait until you're ready, and you'll know it when it's true.
Or you have to be in it, and one of the things I do when I'm suffering is I find a safe person to be with. And I do whatever it is that I want to do, but knowing that I'm not going to be judged if I stop and sit, or if I have to stretch, or if, you know what I'm saying? Like, you put yourself in a safe situation regardless, and then you're going to be okay.
Right. Well, that sounds like maybe a good thought to end on. Maybe we can all work on doing that, giving ourselves that compassion, putting ourselves in that safe position, and we will... see you again next week.
All right. Well, thank you.
Well, and thank you so much for joining us and for your generous visit. And for all of our callers, thank you for calling and for jumping in and sharing your experiences, or just listening in and giving us a reason to keep on doing this. So take care, you all, and I'll see you next week.